Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, July 5th, 2001. And in the fireside room this evening, there is a forum on Holden's food philosophy. Let's listen in.
Explore a bit about the Holden food philosophy and how it takes form here at Holden. And I hope that you will help me in brainstorming ways that we can take bits and pieces of this home with us when we meet Holden, whether it's tomorrow or a year from now. So I'd like to start off by reading to you the Holden food philosophy. And it's sort of like the food mission statement that has been developed over time here. But it really empowers us in our decisions and what we buy and how we cook, just as a mission statement guides a large organization. So here we go. The Holden kitchen is shaped by the conviction that our shared meals contain sacramental elements. When we gather at a common table, we understand that eating is more than simple refueling. We recognize that our food choices have significant consequences for those who gather the food and for the earth that brings it forth. At the same time, the Holden kitchen wishes to celebrate and to uphold the gift and blessing of God's nourishment. We are committed to serving food that is healthy, celebrative, and not harmful to other people or the earth. Holden serves a diet that emphasizes whole grains, fresh vegetables, legumes, and nuts. We seek out suppliers that support workers rather than corporations. We use leftovers creatively and strive to eliminate waste. We hope that the weekly menu mirrors the lively conversation that occurs throughout the village. We welcome those who come to Holden to be both challenged and refreshed. We hope that our shared meals are a significant part of our experience. So aside from the actual food on our table, there's a lot more that goes into our eating experience at Holden. It's one of two things that pulls us together as a community every day: meals and worship. And I think that holds us all together here through the ups and downs of daily work and play, and coming from all different places and backgrounds, we gather around table, both in the dining hall and the Eucharist together. And that is largely why I decided to take on this challenge of work here. I came from a farm and did some simple cooking, but didn't have really any cooking background when I came. But when you run on volunteers here, you kind of take whatever comes and teach them. So it's been a great challenge, but a lot of fun too. And so tonight, in the next few minutes, I would encourage you to think of questions that you have, particularly about this food philosophy or practices that we have in the kitchen, or what is that strange food we see now and then, or anything that's new to you or that you're curious about with the Holden food philosophy, as well as ideas that you'd bring for things you might be doing at home or other things that we haven't tried here that you would recommend. So before we kind of open it up to more of a discussion, I'd like to just outline a few things that we've chosen to do as a Holden community in regards to food sources over the last few years. There's a group that meets periodically in the wintertime called the Food Source Group. And that group is, it looks seriously at where we get our food, more so than how we're cooking it or how often we're eating it, but where are we getting our food? From local places, from far away? How are their workers treated? And to be honest, it's quite a challenge to do research on these things from this place. We send people out of the village sometimes as they're going out on vacation and ask them to do a little research. We do a lot of things through the mail, but as you well know, a lot of things aren't done through the mail these days, and it's a slow process. So that's also why changes are maybe slower to make than we'd like here. And it's also changing an eating tradition from decades, very slowly, one thing at a time, from a system where we get food from one place on the boat twice a week to now we're getting food from probably 25 places on the boat almost every day of the work week. So as we add these changes in, it adds complexity to our work here, but it also adds a richness, I think, when people know that they're eating local organic fruit that is picked nearby by people that they might run into in Chelan and Wenatchee, and they know that they're supporting those workers through that choice of fruit. We've added quite a few new distributors this year, and I'll just highlight a couple of them. One is Sunny Pine Farm, and you may have heard about them. They're in the next valley over across the lake in Twisp, and they're a fairly small farm and owned by a family, and they're supported by some local workers, the family members, and also a former community member, Tori Karpinko, who was our Lawns and Gardens head last year. He's gone there to be the farm manager, and we're really thrilled with that connection. He knows how Holden works, and he's helping us get to know how Sunny Pine works, and together we're building that connection. So a couple times, or once a week, we get a large shipment of organic lettuce and tomatoes and carrots and whatever else they have in season. This does add some complexity to our meal planning. It's been easier in the past to just have a set menu every week, but when it comes to local fruits and vegetables, they vary from week to week, so we kind of adjust things as they arrive. We basically say to them, send us whatever you can, we'll use it. Because they're a small farm, we definitely can't get all of our vegetables from them, but we do take whatever they can give us. And that was supported by an increase in our budget this year approved by the board as well. Because organic food does cost more, but we've received a lot of support from the board and other community members to start us off on that path. This past fall, we discovered, almost by accident, Jersey Boys, which is an orchard in Chelan, and they ended up sending us about 80 boxes of organic apples. They just dropped us a note kind of out of the blue, said, hi, we're here. Do you need apples? And we said, yeah, send us as much as you can. And we had great organic apples all winter, too, which was a nice change. It makes sense. We live in an area with lots of fresh apples and cherries and peaches and everything else, especially in the summer and in the fall. And instead of getting apples from across the country, it makes sense to get them right down the road, down the lake. It's a challenge for these new distributors also to get the food to us. The boat is our main transportation of food, as well as a barge shipment of dry goods about 4 or 5 times a year. We get all of our flour and oatmeal and grains and tomato products up on the barge. But all of the fresh food comes to us on the boat a couple times a week. And also from Sunny Pine Farm, all winter long we enjoyed organic potatoes, which was a welcome addition, especially for our hunger awareness meals. We can highlight that farm as well as the charities that we support through our hunger awareness meals as we experienced at noon today. So those are a few of the changes we've added. Another one is Azure Standard. They're a distributor out of Oregon. And they distribute a lot of local to them organic meat and grain products especially. We've moved to organic flour this spring and summer. And you can also, I believe, get connected with them through families or small communities and purchase food through them in bulk quantities. So that's one that is more accessible than some of the local farms here. So we're definitely trying to support local folks. The food source people in the community this last year expressed an interest in supporting local as even more higher a higher priority than organic, but that's a strong priority as well. So it's a delicate balance. And we still do receive over 70% of our food from large corporations because of delivery, because we need so much food, and the local farms that we're connected with can't supply us with the amount of carrots and lettuce and tomatoes that we need at a time. So Sysco and Food Services of America are two companies that do support us almost probably three-fourths of our food boxes still come from them. And we rely heavily on them. And one advantage to those companies is a very reliable delivery schedule. That's how they run, and they deliver to Stehekin and Chelan. And, so we do count on that. We know food is coming every Monday and Friday from them. And that helps us when, off and on, you know, if a frost kills some food at Sunny Pine Farm, we know we can still get other food supplemented from Sysco. So it's just kind of an outline of some of the food changes we've made this year. And we'd love to see even more changes in the next few years. We have also seen the steps it creates in our work patterns, and it's well worth it, but it is an adjustment as we add more and more people, and then try to communicate with them through letters and periodic faxes. And anyway, so we're thrilled with where it's going, but we definitely have a long road ahead as far as trying to meet up with our food philosophy and trying to find out where our food does come from, especially when it's coming through distributors that we don't necessarily have a background on, have much control over those choices sometimes. So that's kind of our mission, celebrating the steps we have taken the last few years, but also being realistic and knowing we've got a ways to go, as does the whole world probably in that direction. So at this point, I'm curious what questions you might have, either about, you can ask anything, and either about the kitchen in particulars here, how we deal with food distributors, or how we actually cook the food, or anything kitchen related, or our suppliers. Yeah.
What do you raise here, and what are your limitations to doing more?
I'll try to answer that, and if you have anything to add at any point, it's different. We don't raise a lot here. I think we raise rhubarb, herbs, a small variety of vegetables. I think they're growing some lettuce right now. This year, the focus in Lonza Gardens has been raising grass, because last fall we did a major sewer repiping project, which left us with very few lawns. So that's been a major focus, is getting the place green again. My understanding of the limitations is growing season and soil. Is that?
Mm-hmm. And large numbers of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, upwards of 1,500 meals a day sometimes. So, a lot of food.
And deer. So,
and deer.
And deer would definitely be a limitation. Yeah. So I think they're taking steps to grow. Fresh herbs are a great addition, and you can grow quite a lot of those in a small space. So that's a fun thing that we're learning to cook with more and more, and sending somebody out to pick chives quick for this dish that we're cooking. And that's a fun thing to add. But yeah. I've wondered the same thing too, but having lived here through the seasons, realizing we have pretty sandy soil and lots of snow.
She intimated the limitation is numbers of volunteers as well. Mm-hmm. That our volunteer staff, we needed to dedicate the lawns and gardens crew this year to lawns rather than gardens so much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Laura.
Is Sunny Pine Farms in a position where they can be able to increase their size and help meet the demands? Or?
My understanding is that they kind of want to stay at a hobby farm size, and they're not really looking to grow. However, I think they're open to, in the next few years, I don't know the time frame, but looking at changing over to passing it off to new ownership, and in that capacity, they may be able to grow.
And are they also in a position to put you in contact with other farms like them that might supplement them?
I think so. I think Tori's work in particular, because he's the Lonza Gardens head from last year, who's now at Sunny Pine Farm, and he's actually one of the people who got the balls rolling to get us connected with Sunny Pine, Azure Standard in Oregon. So he has a strong interest in that. So I think through his work, We also have ambitions to, especially in the late summer and fall, send somebody out of the village to local farmers markets. And that's a great way to connect with farmers directly as they're at their stands and selling their fruits and vegetables. So I hope that we can find even more. Because most of the farms are small enough that they can't supply our whole needs.
I can get three or four that can do a quarter of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is anything grown down at the Golden Bed and Breakfast?
They have apple trees. Do you know of other?
They have done more gardening, depending on the staff down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty busy with the things they need to do. And if there's a person who loves to garden, sometimes there's more.
Mm-hmm.
There have been years when we've been able to get, even in one shipment from them, just picking everything, one meal. A great meal of ratatouille. Because it takes some vegetables. But they have had some, they do a lot of flowers is what they do
mm-hmm.
most of them.
And this fall they sent us quite a few boxes of apples, which I guess were free from the orchards nearby, because the orchards, when they sign contracts with big distributors, they want a perfect sized apple without blemishes, and so a lot of their crop just goes to waste because they pick the priority apples first. And so I think some of the B&B people actually went and picked some of those apples along with the orchard owners and sent them up to us regularly. So that was a treat, too, knowing that they weren't going to waste.
One of the things they do down there are some apple trees on that property. They do their own applesauce and apple butter for their own meals that they serve, the breakfasts that they serve. So many times if you're there and you have apple butter or applesauce, it's from the trees right there in the yard.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Do you have to replant your herbs each year because of the winter?
I don't think so. I think most of them
survive.
Keep coming up. I think they planted a few more in the cold frame boxes mm-hmm. up on the hill.
Wow.
But the ones around the hotel and the lodges, I think, just come up on the hill.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What's the possibility of having less meat on the menu?
Good question. Probably as strong a possibility as anything right now. And the community has actually said to us, if you could find sources of higher quality meat, organic meat, then we'll have less meat because it'll be better meat. And I think we do have more meat now than a few years ago. And the source of that is actually a high priority. We've got more sources of vegetables and fruits that are reliable, we know that right now, than the meat. And we did find, through Azure Standard, we were able to get some organic beef and free-range chicken and turkey, especially for the winter time. And it's hard in the summer to use that as much because they come whole, and to use whole chicken and turkey take up a lot of space. So we're trying to juggle that a little bit, but... So I think that is something that we're exploring as we find better sources.
Well, and another thing that you could do is today as a meal, at lunch you highlighted how much was saved throughout
mm-hmm.
the year,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you donate. And you could do the same cost analysis with meat and highlight it and say how much you're saving,
mm-hmm.
and you know, keep half the whole thing and donate half
mm-hmm.
to charity because it would. Be more, I would guess, than even the 7,000.
Mm-hmm. And it would be the trade-off, too, having less meat but more the free-range or organic meat. It costs a little bit more. Some of the meats are very comparable. and seafood in particular is something we're working on. There's some community-supported seafood organizations on the coast in Alaska, distributors, but that's been one of the hardest things to research. The companies that we know about haven't responded to letters or phone calls. So if any of you have any ideas in that area, we'd love them. Or stumble upon something when you're at home. Because that is one thing. People here love fish. And when we're this close to a coast, it makes sense to have some fish. But the source of it has been a challenge, too. So that's a good suggestion. Yeah.
The meat conversation is one that goes on and on and on.
Uh-huh.
Over the years.
Well, yeah, it should.
Mm-hmm. And it will, and it continued, it will. I mean, the village, I think at one point, maybe 10, 15 years ago, more than that maybe, was very vegetarian, and that caused a lot of kerfuffle too amongst some people. And so it kind of, the conversation keeps going, and the what our table is on our table reflects that as well. So
I think it would be hard for just an average guest to not have any need, because they are not probably educated enough to know what to eat instead.
It's a fine balance between what people's patterns and desires are for food, and also using this place as kind of a teaching tool too. A lot of this food was new to me when I started working here too, and I have grown to love it. So that, I think, will always be kind of a tension between what people are comfortable with and what they're used to eating, what they love, and kind of back to the food philosophy, how are we eating, where are we getting the food. Did you have a question?
I was just going to share that in my home state, which the terrain is just slightly different in South Dakota, but we have a Bible camp on a smaller scale that composts in a different way by keeping a couple, three pigs at the camp.
Uh-huh.
And come the end of the season, they kind of disappear and end up in the freezer for the next for the next season. So I mean, they kind of know how those animals are fed and tended. Impractical here, I'm sure, but it's another way to convert food waste into something useful.
I was going to say, I think part of the tension that I'm aware of coming up here over the years is between hospitality and the education. Because, I mean, a radical shift in diet for a week can be real hard on one's digestive system sometimes, too.
Uh-huh.
And when you're the only show in town, that there has to be some kind of moderation between that education and the hospitality, the comfort. It's not like you can go down to the restaurant next door when you don't like what's being served.
Absolutely. I've really noticed that. And if you think about all the choices you're bombarded with outside of here, when you drive down any paved road anywhere and you have 20 restaurants that you can choose from, or your refrigerator full of food, or a grocery store that's huge, and people are so used to choice, and they come here with maybe a little knowledge of what they're getting themselves into, but maybe they're coming with family for the first time or something, and it's there are a limited number of choices. And I think that's a stretch for a lot of people, and even that could be a challenge, much less what the choices include. So I've definitely noticed that. So I appreciate people's willingness to kind of dive in and try things. And some people love it, some people don't. But
well, I think the small number suggests you found a good balance point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is really great for kids. It's hard for kids,
mm-hmm.
but my daughter has started to eat some things that she would have never ate at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, she still makes up for it going to the snack bar. but yeah, I knew it was going to be really difficult, and I bought a couple of things for her from home, mm-hmm. but I really tried not to, you know, not to bring too much so that she'll be trying some new stuff. It's the best place.
Well, I really want to compliment you on your meals, because I had my whole family, your 22 members, a few years ago, and if they were by choice to come back for the food they had, they would never come.
Mm.
And I don't know if we dare go home and tell them how good it's been.
Thank you. It's a learning process, and we're changing things along the way, and
wonderful.
Yes.
As long as we keep having fun when we cook, I
think you're doing
marvelous.
Just a second, Dad. I like the balance. I admit I'm a person who likes some meat in the diet, and yet over the span of a week, I think there've only been a couple of meals,
mm-hmm.
and so for I guess maybe in some sense an average type person who may have some meat in the diet, this is quite a downsizing. But it's still, and there's still options always available. So I thought it's been a fine balance. I guess I might have, let's see, two follow-up reactions. I just we take a lot of students to Asia,
mm-hmm.
and they serve a lot of fish, and unfortunately, it takes some skill to eat fish without a lot of waste. And unless people are used to sort of dealing with some bones and things like that, I would suspect the waste amount that is still with fish on the bone would increase unless you're getting fillets. And once you go only fillets, then that creates a whole new situation. I would think that, I mean, I would agree it would be nice here in the Northwest to have a lot of fish dinners, but as we see over there where they do serve a lot of fish, and our students like the fish, but many of them aren't used to eating fish and getting rid of bones, so finally they say, heck with this. And there you end up with a fairly decent amount of fish left. And then finally a question, and that is, we've only been here a week, but if there was one reaction, how about, do you have many casserole-type dishes? I mean, where it's a lot of, back at Augustana College, a lot of the dishes, like would be a tuna noodle casserole, or small little bits of chicken, but mostly pasta and that. Do you have those around here regularly, or is it...
We have a few things like that. In some cases, we use leftovers in that form. We put leftover brats in lasagna.
Yeah, it was great.
Sometimes, I would say more cases than not, we use little bits of chicken and turkey in soups. We have soups quite often during the week at noon. We have spinach squares, which is a casserole, a Greek stew, but not as much like the traditional hot dish casserole that you might be familiar with. Enchilada casserole is kind of a favorite. Tortillas and beans and rice, and it's probably one of the closest things we have to.
I wasn't suggesting you should.
Just curious.
Sometimes in Bali, and just maybe even wondering why. I mean, just as a matter of curiosity, because it's something that does serve a lot of people, and it is sort of usually healthy with a lot of the pasta that's there, and it's sometimes easy to fix for huge quantities of people. Yeah. So I wondered if there was a reason that I'm not aware of that you don't do that. That
I don't know.
That
I
ought to be aware of to take home.
It's probably not a conscious decision to do casseroles or not. We do have a lot of pasta, so we're conscious of a couple things that tend to be heavy on in meals. One is tomato paste, tomato juice, and you're a good reminder of that when we send our menus to Jerry. This is really heavy tomato week. And then same deal with pasta, with lasagna and pasta every Mondays. And And in response to the fish, we do get whole fish and have a small group of people who have learned how to fillet them and then the scraps, all meat scraps here, because of bears and other animals at our compost, all of our meat scraps are burned. So that's how the waste is dealt with here, just to let you know.
Do you have a large freezer that, do you? Like when you get a bunch of apples in the fall, can you cut them up and toss bags in the freezer for applesauce?
We have a couple freezers that are about maybe like a quarter the size of this room, like walk-in freezers and refrigerators. Our apples actually lasted amazingly well. We kept them in Curly, the last food locker, towards the door, and so it got nice and cool in the winter. And they lasted almost all the way to the spring. Oh, and then we did start making applesauce, but we ate it faster than we could freeze it.
I haven't seen yogurt.
Really?
Oh, wait,
It might be in disguise. It's in a big silver container on the breakfast
Okay.
Yeah, we make yogurt here. And that's one thing I think it talks about in our cookbook, which you may or may not have seen. This is not a plug for you to buy it as much as just like a resource we have on hand, Cook Boldly, and it's in the bookstore. But it talks about making yogurt at home, making Holden bread, and some of the basic things we do, as well as some of the fun dishes and desserts we have. But yogurt's a tricky thing.
It should be a plug to get. It's a good cook, like a little price.
Now, are you still using the same recipes from... We started cooking here in the early 70s. It's still basically the same recipe, because, like this gentleman was saying, we remember some more casseroles than we did then.
I would guess that most recipes are newer than that. There are some that are handwritten from maybe 15 years ago, but more of them are new or have been revised. We get a lot of our recipes from Moosewood cookbooks. And Moosewood's a restaurant, but they use a lot of whole foods and great homemade soups and desserts. And so we get a lot of recipes from there. Some of us bring a few recipes from home and try them out, and if they work, then we plug them in to the menu. We get recipes from all over the place. Some of them will never die, like lentil loaf, and that's fine because I like it. So some of them will be around a while. Others we try once and it flops, and then we don't like it anymore.
And some are creative here, like spicy Thai
noodles.
Was created here one winter, and that's kind of the beauty of the winter community, is that it's smaller and that you can try smaller amounts in the community or there giving feedback and try it again another time, a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
Do you still make egg kaka?
Yeah. I think it's on the menu about
that's
West
probably the old,
really
oldest thing on the menu.
We have a 4-week rotation of the menu in the summertime and a 5-week one in the winter. And some things seem a bit more repetitive, like we have lasagna a couple times a month, but a lot of things we just have one time a month. Breakfasts are more repetitive, like we have oatmeal every week and rice pudding every couple weeks.
That means we need to stay in
that. Yeah. Keeps us from going crazy if I'm going to sleep for the week, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
For the items that you do get that are organic, for just for our information, what would you estimate? Do you have a rough idea on what the cost increase would be to go for those, whatever that percentage of yours that is organic, about how much do you have to pay more because you've made the decision to go
organic? Yeah, I'll take a good stab at it. I pulled some things off of our bulletin board, which I'll tack back up, and that's a great resource in the dining hall, too. And so we've increased our organic food from about 4% of our food to 17% in the last year. And to do that, this includes organic meat, too, we made about 9 or 10% budget increase. And that's including the normal 3% or so that they save for inflation. Some of the organic vegetables, especially onions and potatoes, are about the same from Sunny Pine. And when we were creating our budget last September, we had price quotes from Sunny Pine, all of our invoices from Sysco, and kind of compared and then figured out about how much Sunny Pine give us, like maybe a quarter of our lettuce needs for the year, and then did a whole bunch of complicated math and figured out that about 10%. And some of the vegetables are a lot more expensive. Organic tomatoes are a huge increase, and carrots. And some of the meats were similar too. When the chicken, organic or free range chicken is on sale, it's the same price. So we jump on that and order a lot of it. Just depends on the. Yeah.
Have you all ever tried like growing hydroponic tomatoes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody else mentioned that earlier in the week to me, wondering if we would do it, if we'd ever tried it.
Because a lot of times you can do a lot in small space with that. And you can also control some of the seasonality by having things given some kind of cold frame or something.
Yeah, I don't know the science of it, if it takes electricity and all that sort of thing. And we haven't tried it. Is the answer? Would it take electricity in the winter?
There might be some if you didn't have like a gravity-fed nutrient system or something.
And you'd have to keep it someplace where it's warm. Someplace where it's warm, right? So freeze. Water.
Sometimes it can be done like in kind of a cold frame, and then you can have like the movable sides in the summer or something like that.
Are there any other questions about food life here or the philosophy before we go into hopefully brainstorming some ways to take it on with us?
Keep up the good work.
What?
Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. Yes. That's right. Thanks for your support. I am by no means an expert. I should have said that at the very beginning. So I've learned everything that I know pretty much from people before me and what I've picked up this year. And we feel greatly encouraged as a kitchen, as a food service coordinator team, to move in these new directions because of guest support and the board and the community. So it's definitely not just a single work area doing this. Everyone's eating together, and hopefully everyone has some voice in these changes for things that stay the same, too. So, yeah.
How frequently do you run out of something while you're serving it so that there's not enough? And how do you know how much?
Tricky question. Hopefully not very often do we run out of things. It happens on occasion, and it's not on purpose, ever. The goal is, in theory, to have enough to have everyone have plenty of food as they would like it on their plates, and not have a lot of waste. That's why we only send out as much food as hopefully the tables need, because we do have to throw everything away that hits the tables. But we also don't want enormous amounts of leftovers. And leftovers is a tricky thing, but I think over the years they've developed great systems for using them, some recipe ideas, and then also on our sandwich bar days, Tuesday noon and Friday noon. Tuesday noon we serve all of the leftover entrees from the last week, and on Friday we serve all the leftover soups from the last week. And we have to use everything up within a week or freeze it. That's left over, and we can only reheat things twice. There are a lot of just little rules that keep us in a pretty set system. So hopefully we don't run out of things too often. It's tricky when food doesn't arrive for some reason, then we make some adjustments, but I think for the most part it works okay. And we know how much to make because some brilliant people in the past have created large volume recipes for us where you follow down the column to make something for 50 people, and then there's a column over here for 450 people, and most of the time it works out pretty well.
How often do you serve dessert, and is there a philosophy behind that?
You might be able to speak to this more. We serve dessert twice a week, on Wednesday nights on the buffet and on Sunday evenings with the Sunday salad supper. I think the philosophy is probably one of encouraging health and so less sugar, but it's kind of a treat a couple times a week, knowing that there's plenty of sugar available in other avenues. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I think there's a little history. I'm not exactly sure of all of this, but I think it started in trying to keep Sunday as a feast day, and that we had dessert once a week, mm-hmm. and that Sunday noon would be a big meal, what we would all call a Sunday dinner, and then in the evening we'd have a lighter supper, and we would have mm-hmm. dessert with that. It made it a feast day along with the feast that we then received at the Eucharist. And then I think it kind of dissolved a little bit, and we got it twice a week. So that was really I started getting it twice a week. I'm very sure that that's how it started.
Well, part of it was the picnic atmosphere as well. Picnic,
Wednesday was a buffet outside.
Mm-hmm. But we also had more in the winter time.
More dessert in the winter?
We used to have more dessert in the winter time than in the summertime.
Wow. And now I would say it's definitely less. It's the same two times a week, but snack bar is twice a week in the wintertime. There's not pool hall stocked with candy in the wintertime. So that might be one. Yeah. So I'm curious if you all, for those of you who are just new to Holden or have been coming here for 25 years, if you have ideas of how you could take this large-scale food production or food service scheme and bring little bits and pieces of it home to share with your families or friends. Do any of you have ideas? And I'll just throw one out there to start us off, and that is quite a few families have let us know that they've taken the hunger awareness tradition home with them and have chosen for one meal a week to eat very simple foods and kind of keep track of about how much money they're saving by doing that, and then you pick a charity to donate that to. So that's one concrete thing that some people do. So I'm just curious if others of you have things you've tried or would like to try or have questions about, maybe you just share with us as we go.
Actually, our church has taken that idea also for Lenten.
Mm-hmm.
Simple Lenten meal.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that for some 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's popular now everywhere.
Simple Lenten meals.
Mm-hmm.
I think, one change for some people is that if they're used to four or five things on their plate and they have salad and an entree and maybe some bread on their plate, that's in itself a change. Fewer choices that you pour some more time into making those, but not as many options to change that some people choose.
I can say when I did, I used to live here in the early 80s and then moved away. And when I lived in Minneapolis, I joined a CSA, a community-supported agriculture farm, which then put me more in touch with my food. I took what I got each week, like we take what we get from Sunny Pines. And I also went out and helped with planting and weeding and harvesting and stuff like that at the farm. So I encourage anybody that if you are interested in that sort of, or having more organic and simpler food, and if you don't garden, to find a community-supported agriculture near you, and there's lots of them now. When I joined mine, it was like the first one in Minnesota. So there's lots of them around now.
I think there's a directory. I'm pretty sure there's a directory in our resource center. It's an entire box full of food newsletters and pamphlets and resources, and I think there's also a large book with community-supported agriculture resources.
It's probably on the internet. I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Uh-huh. As I think about taking it home, I think about time. I mean, mm-hmm. you've talked about time and volunteer hours and mm-hmm. staff hours. I guess most of us have two workers in the family.
Right.
Can you speak to that? I mean, you know, the Whole Foods is great, but it sure isn't convenient.
Right, yeah.
Unless you're talking about soup or something where you can kind of do it all day.
Yeah, I've thought about that too, trying to imagine, you know, especially if I go off to school from here, how I'm ever going to find time to do any cooking. And some people have talked about picking part of their weekend and spending a couple hours and just cooking a few things and then freezing and pulling a little bit of the time out of the freezer. Soups freeze great, casseroles freeze great. And there are some things that don't take all that long to cook. If you have it made ahead and then you can just throw it in the oven when you get home. But I totally agree that, I mean, the reason that we can feed 450 people is that there are people working from 6 in the morning till 7:30 at night in the kitchen. 16 people at a time cooking large amounts of food. So that is a huge challenge. Do others have ideas of how to... Laura?
I do what I call plant over sperm. It's like when I cook, I overcook with the idea that the end of the week that it'll show up in a different form.
Uh-huh.
But we never have leftovers at our house. We only have encores, which might be
good. Sandwich bar with encore soups. I like that.
Yes.
Yeah?
Well, I was reminded today when Diane was talking about the starving children in China, and because that's what I heard when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were taught not to waste food. And I see my own grown children in their homes. They throw out food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I always... And we use encore food too, but I also always have a pot in the refrigerator where I throw leftovers and make soup with them.
Yeah.
And as the pot fills a little bit, I can add tomato paste or whatever.
Yeah.
And then
It doesn't take any more time because you end up with a pot of soup whether you like it or not.
And it never tastes the same, I bet.
No. It's wonderful because a few extra green beans, a few of this, it never looks the same, but after a few days, you've got soup.
Yeah. I'm doing more of that, too. I just save all my leftovers and make whatever soup it comes up with.
And meat juice.
We've got the recipe.
Well, I keep a bucket in the freezer for, like, you know, that last spoonful of vegetables.
Sure.
When I moved away from here, I've lived here now, granted, 7 years, but when I didn't, I lived alone and worked long hours and didn't want to come home and cook either. And there were several friends like that. And so we made an agreement that we would, once in a while, get together and each would have made a casserole and divided it up, in, if there were eight of us, into eight. Servings and frozen it, and we spread them around and we met and all went home with eight different entrees instead of having the same casserole every night for, you know, forever. And that was real fun. Mm-hmm. There's community building too.
Right. We're vegetarian, so we eat in a similar manner. And for us, it took a while to figure out recipes that we could do quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now it's just second nature, and they don't take any longer. And it's a habit at this point for us. We live in San Diego, and we have a lot of fresh vegetables and fruits year-round that are organically grown locally. Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, that's a luxury rather compared to other parts of the country. But our favorite meal, if I could share this.
Please do.
We use flatbread with hummus, slices of tomato, slices of mozzarella, and fresh basil with olive oil.
Lovely.
It is. And it's a meal because you've got the hummus and the whole grains and the fruits and the dairy. It's all right there. And then if we're really decadent, we have the artichoke.
And stir fry came to mind too when you were that's been a huge kick the last few years.
Yeah.
But you can use whatever veggies you have, even the second time around, and they cook them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say is like rather than just like the traditional soups, like throwing it all in, even just a frying pan with a little bit of olive oil, then you can have fun with just different spices and make it taste way different. And it seriously takes like 3 minutes, and you have your meal. And if you made rice ahead of time, like it's really fast. Like it's easier for me to cook like vegetarian than it is to mess around with meat. And too, like Kathy said, like once you start cooking with it, it just gets easier, and you learn like what to throw together. And then all of a sudden, like you're making meals in like 10 or 15 minutes, and it's.
I had 3 years ago, I lost almost 60 pounds, and I basically went from a lot of, I ate the right stuff, but I ate way too much of it, and that was the big shock when I joined diet program with serving sizes. I had to reduce to maybe a fifth of what I was actually eating, and I told myself, "Oh, what I'm eating is pretty good stuff here, you know." But I just ate all day long, and that's one thing that I like about how you serve food here too. That, you know, if I had a dinner party and 8 people, and I would put on the table, but it's put on the table here, I'd probably be people would look at me kind of desperately. But the thing is that. One is like the lasagna today. Most of the time, when people eat a piece of bread and some other things, they're full. Mm-hmm. Although at first it might look like so little, it, you know, after 20 minutes and actually people talk and stuff, you're full. And there has been plenty. And now maybe 2 people go back and get a little bit more. But in the end, we eat too much just because it's right there sitting on the table.
Yeah.
And that's one of actually the biggest problems that by the way people are overweight is that those incredible servings. You go to a restaurant, you get, we have now in Mount Vernon, Outback Steakhouse or something. It's insane what you get.
This doesn't produce a way of cooking, but several years ago,
after Christmas, we had to buy a car, and we weren't expecting to. And we simply couldn't afford to live the way we had been. So we decided just to use what we had. And we had a freezer, and we gardened, and we tried during the month of January just to use what we've got, except for some fresh fruits and vegetables and some milk. Mm-hmm. And other than that, we just started to look at our freezer and our refrigerator cupboards and either create on our own or read cookbooks instead of grocery ads and other ads. And we basically don't go into stores the whole month of January to shop for anything, with the exception of those fresh things. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fun to see what kind of a challenge you can, what can we come up with this time. And many times, there are great things at the bottom of the freezer that simply don't get used because I just keep adding to it.
And I meet at your house in January.
That reminds me of one sort of philosophy of life, but also of food especially, that I've learned this year, and that is viewing our food supply or life in general as abundant or scarce. And so most all of us have the luxury of abundant food choices. We don't have a fear of starvation, and a lot of the world does, especially as we focused on today. But that's part of the humor that Christy Post is the other food service coordinator, and we keep each other sane by laughing a lot. And one thing we laugh about, especially when a food item doesn't come in, or the meal, or two freezers break down at once, or that was it. But we always joke around, well, there's always canned pears. Because honestly, we have enough canned pears to keep the whole village alive for a couple days. That it takes away a lot of the worry of, you know, what if this doesn't come in, or what if this recipe flops, or, you know, and you have a supply in your freezer, and when our freezers broke down, we realized we have a lot of food, and we learned how to use it creatively while it was thawing out very quickly.
People tell us this, oh yeah, you save all this during January, or whatever month we choose, and then you must just binge and have this huge grocery bill when you go back. And you don't. We go back to the store and realize there really isn't much we need. We buy very little that first week or two afterwards, because you just realize what you can do without.
Yeah. We had, a few years ago, we had, after Christmas, and we had 100 guests here. Mm-hmm. In the winter, that's quite a bit. We had 19 avalanches across the road and didn't get out for a week. And we ran out of fresh milk and eggs. And we had dry milk. And you can get along without eggs for a while. Mm-hmm. It's just fine. Mm-hmm. So, it's a similar thing.
Yeah. Does the village qualify for receive any, food from the government? I mean, I remember when I was working at a Bible camp 20 years ago, yeah, where we had government meat, government peanut butter, and government flour, and cheese and stuff.
I did too.
We don't do any of that here.
We don't qualify. I don't know how much of that stuff would actually fit in with what we're trying to do. Yeah, it all comes out of our general operating budget. Okay.
Government cheese.
Yeah. Bolger.
Come on.
Any other thoughts? All right. Well, as we wrap up, I want to share on from all of us, basically, who get to play with food here, that it's a joy to cook for you all. And it's been fun hearing ideas and questions. And feel free to find me in the rest of your time here if you have more questions, or pick your head through that little window in the kitchen and see what's going on. And if you're inspired to need bread, just ask a cook, and we'd love to have you join that fun too. It's a big adventure. It's a lot of work too, but it's very meaningful to provide food for people here. So thank you for your support and your good, challenging questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, thank you.